When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to the Van Leer Institute series on ideas. I'm Renee Garfinkel. Today we have the privilege of talking with David Tal about his important new book, The Making of an Alliance, The Origins and Development of the U.S.-Israel Relationship. David Tal is professor and Yossi Harel Chair in Modern Israel Studies in the Department of History at the University of Sussex. An historian of diplomatic and military history, he's published extensively on Israeli diplomatic and military history and U.S. diplomatic history and disarmament policies. Among his many earlier books are The American Nuclear Disarmament Dilemma and Israel Identity Between Orient and Occident, which he edited. David Tal, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
David, I'm so glad we have the chance to go beyond today's headlines by adding your important historical perspective. Let's start with the basics. America and Israel are often said to have a special relationship. What does that expression really mean?
Well, it means, I would say, almost what you can hear from that. The term itself, special relationship, it's quite common on the one hand and debatable in international relationship. Some relate to it really in terms of formal and non-abiding necessarily term. But in the case of the Israeli-American relationship, I think that it really has substance. And that substance has to do with the way the special relationship were formed and the origins of this relationship. The one thing to say is that when we speak about the special relationship is special mainly from the American side, in the sense that, for instance, that I'll discuss in a minute, the special nature of this relationship is much more significant from the American side. For Israel, these relationships are viewed more in what I would call realistic way, and not so much as the way it is seen by the Americans. So the origins of what will become a special relationship between Israel and the United States are the religious foundations of the American society and identity. The United States was established by people who had very strong belief in the Bible, in the scriptures, and they are the ancestors of people who came from Europe, escaped from Europe. Some of them escaped from Europe, and they described their journey from Europe, from Britain, and from some other European countries. They described their journey as similar to the Jewish exodus from Egypt, and they used these terms to explain their migration from Europe to America. The British king at the time is Pharaoh, and they cross the Red Sea, which is the Atlantic, and they arrived to the New Jerusalem, to their Canaan, to their Palestine, which was America, to establish a city upon the hill, which is Jerusalem. And all their reference and all their sources of identity are based really on this idea of their origin, which has to do with the scriptures. Now, American history, the Americans essentially, they don't really have national identity the way you would see in Europe, for example, which is national, which is based on history, on past, on geography, and on shared memory. American nation is relatively a new nation, and they base their identity, national identity, more on ideas. And these ideas, drawn a lot both from the Enlightenment, but also from the scriptures. So they have this very strong attachment to the scriptures, to the Old Testament, that is the Jewish Bible. And they also took lessons from the old scriptures when they started to model their political institutions. For example, the idea of democracy, while it is based also on the Enlightenment, but it is to a great extent based also on the scriptures. And for example, an English-American philosopher, Thomas Paine, described the Israelite the judges era as the time, as the era when God favored the, what was for him the Israelite Republic. You relate to that. And that was a model. That was a model that he thought that the United States would be United States, should endorse and adapt. And that became part of the meaning of democracy for the Americans. So for the Americans, the idea of democracy was not just about a political system. It was about a religious-based political system. And that was something that they felt that they are in debt to the Jews for that. And they felt that that is part of what became to be known as the shared values. They shared these core ideas about the nature of the American identity, of the American political system, with the Jews. And that came along together with the emergence of religious currents within Protestantism that called for the return of the Jews to the land of Israel. And these calls were essentially based on two major themes. One theme was apocalyptic, that is, that there was those who called dispensational millennialists, who believed that in order to bring about the second coming of Jesus, Jews should return to their homes to establish the third temple, and that would start a process that would end up eventually with the second coming of Jesus. And the second current, the second theme, is what became later to be known as fundamentalism, and that is those people who believe literally in the truth, in the inerrancy of the Bible. And if in the Bible God told Abraham that the land of Israel would belong to him and to his descendants, then that is what should happen. And hence, the Jews should get back to their homeland as God decreed and ordered. So this is one aspect of the relationship that led to political actions on the part of the Americans in helping the Jews to establish their national home. With that came also some other ideas, which the other one was the development of the idea of the pioneer. The American, through their progress in the along the American continent, when the United States was at the stage of building up, settlers moved from the east, from the eastern coast to the west, and they did that in a movement that was partly called as the pioneer. The people who did that were pioneers. And the Zionists, the first Zionists, were perceived by the Americans as those pioneers. And that image of the pioneer continued to dominate the way Americans viewed the development of the Zionist movement in Palestine. And then later on, when the State of Israel was established, then the Israeli settlers across the country were also described for quite a time. It was even when Golda Meir visited, as the prime minister, visited in the United States in the 1970s, even at that time, the governor of Illinois described Golda Meir as part of that pioneer society and pioneer movement. So that was another idea that tied together Americans to Israel. And the third aspect was history. That is, if the fundamentalist related to the biblical stories as God-related decrees, then those who look at the history related to the fact that the land of Israel was the historical home of the Jews, and hence they have the right to return to their Jewish historical home, to their historical home, and they also sought to kind of repent for the suffering that the Jews suffered throughout the years of exile, 2,000 years of exile, mainly in Europe, where they suffered from persecutions, which was caused by Christians like them. And then, of course, the high point of, or low point of the Holocaust. All of that led them to assume that justice should be made to restore the Jewish national home as a way to recover for the historical suffering that the Jews sustained. So these three elements, the religious, the shared values, the pioneer and history, these elements eventually laid in the heart of what became to be known as the special relationship. That is, the Americans viewed Israel not just close ally, but they see Israel as part of the American very identity. There is a very close tie. There is a very close alliance, which is based on themes and ideas that are part of the American history, memory, and identity. And this is the basis of the American special relationship with Israel.
Those are the deeply held values and history, identity, and perspective, which are constant. But there are also transient issues, temporary issues involved in the relationship that are interests. In the diplomatic world, they're called shared interests. So talk a little bit about the balance of the constants and the interests in the dynamic relationship between the U.S. and Israel. What interests are at play in 2024?
Oh, 2024 is not history, so it's a bit too early for me to say. But when we looked at it, and you're right. Now, when we speak about interest, there are two things here. There is one is the conflictual aspect. That is where the American interests collide with Israel interests. And there is another aspect when the two interests, the interest of the two countries are aligned. Now, when we speak about the interest that shared by Israel and the United States, that was a gradual process because until the late 1950s, the interest of the two countries actually collided. The United States supported the Zionist movement and later the State of Israel, which went against the American interests. If you look at the map of the Middle East, in 1917, for example, when President Woodrow Wilson endorsed the Balfour Declaration, you would assume that the American interest would be with the Arab countries and not with the just nascent new Zionist movement. Yet, Woodrow Wilson decided to go against what seemingly was American interest and to embrace the Zionist movement. And the same happened with President Truman, for example. President Truman, when he acted actively to promote the vote for the Jewish state in the United Nations in 1947, and later in May 1948, when he recognized the State of Israel 11 minutes after its establishment, he acted against the advice of officials from the State Department who showed that it was not in American interest to support the Zionist movement and the State of Israel. And he did that because of these essential, fundamental constants, what I call constants. And that went on until the end of the, until 1968, where the American interest really laid with the region, with the Arab countries and not with Israel. And yet, the United States continued its very special attitude toward the State of Israel while trying to advance American interests in the region. However, for Israel, the more important aspect was interest. And hence, Israel started to try to show itself as useful in serving American interests. It done, for example, in the beginning by sharing intelligence with the United States as much as possible. Now, the thing that helped Israel to bring its, to join together with the United States along the interest path was the proximity, because of the special relationship, because of the special attitude toward Israel, American corridors were open to Israeli officials. Israeli officials at almost any level could speak with their counterparts quite easily. The doors were open, and hence they could offer to the American officials in the Congress, in the White House, in the State Department, they could offer them what the Israelis thought were would serve American interests. And in a gradual process during the 1950s, for example, intelligence exchanges increased and deepened. And after the 1967 war, that was a time when the first significant change took place. Israel was able to share with the Americans, for example, information about Soviet tanks that it captured during the war. And then the cooperation and working together on strategic issues and on shared interests just increased and deepened. And that came also together when the United States tried until a certain point to distinguish between the Cold War and the Arab-Israeli conflict, not to allow the Arab-Israeli conflict to become part of the Cold War. However, and we won't go into that really, but at a certain point during the late 1950s, the two intertwined. The Cold War, the Arab-Israeli conflict became part of the Cold War in the sense that Egypt, for example, became a Soviet ally. And with that, the United States became an Israeli ally, Egypt a Soviet ally, and hence there is the Cold War. Now, for Israel, the issue was really the Arab-Israeli conflict. For the Americans, the issue was the Cold War. And Israel managed to play that in a way that to present Israel not only as being a participant in the Arab-Israeli conflict, but also a party to the Cold War, despite the fact that Israel did not really contribute to the American efforts in the Cold War. But officially, that was the case, which became very clear during the Yom Kippur War, when Israel, equipped with American arms, defeated the Syrians and the Egyptians, who were equipped with Soviet arms. And that was kind of the high point of the entanglement between the Cold War and the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Throughout most of the time period you've been discussing, where the presidents were inclined toward Israel and the Congress more or less was inclined toward Israel, the State Department was different. Tell us a little bit about the Arabists in the State Department, what role they played or continue to play in the U.S.-Israel relationship.
Yeah. Now, one thing should be said about the State Department and officials, because there is, in the literature, you can find more than once reference to State Department officials, to the diplomats, almost as anti-Semitic because of their very strong, sometimes anti-Israeli position. Now, they were not really anti-Israeli. They were, most of all, they were Americans. However, the chances that an American diplomat, an average professional American diplomat, would serve in Arab country was much higher than the chance that that diplomat would serve in Israel. There are about 22 Arab countries. So throughout the career of a professional diplomat, that diplomat would serve in Arab countries. And that gave this diplomat a perspective that many Americans did not have about the interest of the Arabs, about the perspective of the Arabs, about the way the Arabs view things. And we know that when you get really to know a society, then you see the nuances, you see the things are not really black and white. There is much more gray. There are interests. There are things that you don't see from Washington if you never visited or you are not really familiar with Arab society. So when these diplomats came back to Washington to take desk positions in the State Department, they became kind of representatives of the American perspective. So they viewed American interest in the region in a wider perspective as compared to people who did not really view that in that way. So they were not necessarily anti-Israelite. What they were was they represented the broader perspective, and they inclined to see also the Americans, the Arab side of the story. And they brought that with them, and they tried to influence. Now, the thing is that they did not really have a lot of influence in the sense that the real maker of American foreign policy is basically the president. That is by law. It is the American president who makes foreign policy, the Congress involved also in the making of foreign policy. The Secretary of State, to a great extent, is the executioner. He is not really the one who formulates American foreign policy, but in any case, usually the Secretary of State would not be a professional diplomat, but he would come also from among the wider pool of American politicians. And that means that basically, he was as supportive of Israel as any American. He was influenced. He got his reports from the State Department officials. They informed him about things. So he saw also the broader picture in many cases. But there were cases where the Secretary of State took the Department of State's side and position about things. For example, George Marshall in 1948, he took very strongly the position of the State Department against siding with Israel when Israel was established, because the State Department officials saw the siding with Israel as going against American interests. But later on, you had a Secretary of State and Joel Schultz, for example, Ronald Reagan's Secretary of State, he was one of the most fervent and strong supporter of Israel. So the State Department, they had an impact, they had an influence, but that was quite limited. And their role was mainly really to shed lights on aspects that usually the politicians were not always exposed to.
Let's talk for a moment about the ordinary Americans, not the politicians and the diplomats.
Yeah.
And the ordinary Israeli loves America. Israelis love American culture. They're very grateful for American support historically and currently of under every president. Today, despite the highly visible campus protests, what are Americans' attitudes toward Israelis?
Yeah, it's and the thing is that you made a distinction between the politician, the presidents, and the people, and that distinction does not really exist. The president, the members of Congress, they are part of the American people. They were elected to high positions, but essentially they were brought up in the same environment as any other American, which means essentially that most Americans, the education, that the values that they are being exposed to, the way they were grown up is similar, and it's the same for most Americans. So the values that I was speaking about in the beginning of our conversation, these values were introduced, and they are introduced to most Americans. Now, we need to be the average support for Israel, as expressed in polls throughout from the almost the very beginning, from the late 1940s, 1950s, and later on, it's always evolved about 50 to 60% Americans saying that they favor Israel, they support Israel. Some say something like, I don't know, and some say that they don't favor Israel. But there is a solid basis of Americans to support Israel, and that goes from the common person in somewhere in Independence, Missouri, as the president of the United States. So the common sense of most Americans is their inclination, because of these aspects that I started with the discussion, that impact and influence the majority of the Americans. Now, from time to time, you can see bursts of, and you asked me about this, the variance about when the interests are not collided, are not aligned, and there is a collision. And from time to time, you can see that American public opinion is more, I wouldn't say less favorable to Israel because of specific events. For example, the 1982 war in Lebanon led to much protest among many Americans, and the figures show that the support for Israel decreased during these days. In 1987, 1988, with the first Intifada, the same thing happened. So these are waves that are impacted by very concrete events, but they don't have a real impact on the fundamentals. That is, you have events that happen from time to time and cause a change in the American, in the way the American, average American person, as the member of Congress, as the president, would view Israel. But these are responses to specific events that might trouble, might upset the average and the American president. But and now I think that we are at the same situation. Now, I can't judge, of course, the impact of the current events. I would assume that, for example, the recent vote in Congress, there was an act that extended the meaning of anti-Semitism, which was enacted by Congress just recently. And more than, I think, nearly 400 members of the House of Representatives voted for it, which means that the very solid support for Israel is there, as you can see it. Now, we need to remember that the members of Congress, essentially, they are the representatives of the people. They are in touch with people. They reflect the sentiment of the people. They impacted the people. And there is an exchange. There is a dialogue between the member of Congress and his constituencies. So when Congress, in a very significant majority, expressed support for Israel, that means that that solid basis still exists.
How did the terror attack on 9/11, the World Trade Center, impact the U.S.-Israel relationship?
And again, I don't think that it impacted in a fundamental way. That means that, once again, the fundamentals were always there. What changed to some extent, more or less extent, what changed is the rhetoric. If the Cold War ended, and ostensibly one major factor that justified the strategic relationship between Israel and the United States disappeared, gone, no Cold War, then Israel would no longer serve American interests in that area. And the attack, the September 11 attacks, provided kind of a new pretext or a new explanation to the strategic cooperation between Israel and the United States, and that what became to be known as the clash of civilizations. Now you have the war against radical Islamism, and the fight against radical Islamism is shared by Israel and the United States. Once again, that was a very convenient rhetoric. That was a kind of, and it happened, by the way, just a little bit before, during the very horrendous terror attacks in Israel with the bus exploding. So there was now American deeper understanding of what's going on in Israel and the way Israel was reacting. And that once again created a more, you would say, shared interest in fighting against terrorism, fighting against radical Islam. But as I said, essentially, the strategic cooperation between the two states in 2001 were already very solid. People are not really aware to the extent of the strategic relationship between the two states, which are based on the special relationship. The special relationship with, yeah, sorry.
There are 22 Arab states and just one Jewish state. So historically, it's quite understandable that early in its modern history, Israel was seen as little David to the Arab world's Goliath. When and why did the international and media lens narrow to focus solely on Israel and the Palestinians? How did that change?
Well, if you're asking about why the world view that goes beyond, I would say, the extent of my work. And I assume that the change in Israel image was the result of Israel accomplishments in the battlefield. When Israel defeats in 1967 four armies, and you may say more, when Israel managed to turn what seems to be in the beginning a defeat in 1973 into a significant victory, when you see that Israel became a military regional empire, then of course that the image, and then things like the Intifada, the first Intifada, the war in Lebanon, which explored or exposed the Palestinians not just as terrorists, but they were now subjected, they were the weak side, they were subjected to Israeli attacks in 1982, and then 1987, 1988, when Israel reacted very strongly against the Intifada, and the American viewers saw every night images and video clips of Israeli well-armed Israeli soldiers countering civilians who were throwing stones and demonstrating allegedly non-violently. And all of that created, on the one hand, humanized the Palestinians, and on the other hand, showed Israel as being a very strong military power. And that, of course, changed the image of Israel from being a David into being a Goliath. But that change, again, in the United States, it was not that dramatic. The image of Israel did not change in the sense, and if anything, that change was admired by the Americans, showing how these Jews who were really suffering throughout their history from persecutions, how they now stood up, how they raised up, and they became a significant military power and ally of the United States, and in a way, working together with the United States to advance American strategic interest in the region. As to the world, I think that the Jews always had a very special place and role within European consciousness, within Christian consciousness. So the Jews were always judged a bit differently, whether to the worse or to the better at the certain points. So Israel was always a very sensitive issue because Judaism and Jews were always a sensitive issue. And hence, it was expected if the Jews, those people who suffered from persecutions, if they are now persecuting other people, then you need really to look very closely at that and to act upon it. But I don't think that that created a significant change in the American attitude toward Israel. And if it did, it actually happened to the better.
Finally, David, Hamas's brutal, vicious attack on Israel on October 7th started a war that, among other things, exposed a stunning amount of anti-Semitism, anti-Israelism in the West, including among the most educated classes. I know this is beyond your research, but I ask you to speculate. Where do you see that going, and what do you think it means for the future of the special relationship?
I think that part of it really, I would say on the basics, we need to remember the United States is still a very religious, very Christian state. We can see that in the ruling of the High Court, the Supreme Court in the United States. We could see that in the broad attitude of many Americans on issues, the controversial issues today. We can see that in the way Americans support President Trump, which has to do with that nature of identity. We can see how Congress, the Senate, and House of Representatives still support Israel in a very significant numbers. And what we see in campuses, I think, if you take really an average campus when you have 5,000, 4,000 students, I don't think that the demonstrations really bring into are made by these thousands of students. There are core violent activists who are driven by, some of them driven by really goodwill intentions. They are not always anti-Semitic. They are anti-Israeli in the sense that they think that they are fighting for the right cause, for the good cause. But they represent, I think, in many cases, the minority among even their own peers. So, and they represent also a very specific kind of a society and a social association. So I don't think that we are speaking yet about a fundamental change in the very nature of American support for Israel among American people. Whether this is still the case, it is, of course, a matter for the future. We need to see. But as far as it goes now, I think that at least in the places where America, the United States, demonstrates support for Israel, we see similar numbers and similar actions to the kind of relationships that Israel had with the United States before October 7th. And if anything, October 7th, I think, at least among certain amount of Americans, revealed an aspect of the relationship of Israel with its environment, which only strengthened the support of many Americans in Israel, of Israel.
Well, that's encouraging. The book is The Making of an Alliance, The Origins and Development of the U.S.-Israel Relationship. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today, David.
Thank you very much, Renee.
And thanks to our researcher, Bela Pasikov.